Hey everyone, welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups for episode 6 of season 5 of The Amazing Race Canada. My name is Jessica Leese, and here with me, as always, is some dude I don't know from school, Mr. Dan Heaton. Dan, how you doing?
I am great. You know, I'm just preparing to go buy a Chevy Equinox True North Edition so that I can just see all around my car and not get distracted at all.
That was a commercial right in the middle of a show.
Every week now.
And I mean, more power to them. Really, U.S. Amazing Race could only wish for that much product placement. This show is getting funded in perpetuity because sponsors are lining up to sponsor it.
Yeah, no, and it's still, it was a fun week. It was kind of a kitchen sink episode, I feel like. We had everything under the sun thrown in there, except an elimination.
Well, you can't have everything, right?
Yeah, and I thought it was fun. What did you think about the episode?
Yeah, I mean, for a non-elimination leg, this was really a lot of fun. And I'm continually amazed at the number of tasks that Amazing Race Canada can pack into 45 minutes of television, where the U.S. sometimes stumbles to put like a detour in a roadblock.
Yeah, and that's why I find things like the U-turn, even with a non-elimination, to be rather pleasant and fun, because it's not, I mean, I know they talked about it a lot, but it wasn't the whole episode. I mean, they did four tasks. I mean, I'm not talking about the two sides of the detour, four actual things, two extra tasks. I mean, and one was a good part of the episode with the test. So I love that. That's where I'm like, if they're going to do a non-elimination, even with the U-turn, if they do all kinds of fun, different stuff and they end up self-driving, I mean, it's hard to mess that up.
Really is. Like, they're firing on all cylinders. And, you know, I think we open every podcast with an extended, effusive praise dump on this program. But they're killing it, man. They really are. And I find it so action-packed. It's like listening to a podcast on 1.5 speed.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. And this is the interesting thing, because it's packed and it moves fast. But I still find this show a little less frenetic than with the editing. I know that they're moving quickly, yet somehow they still find times for the most random moments to happen and they slide them in there. So I kudos to the editors, because this week, while very busy, it also didn't feel rushed. Like, they had time for what I think they needed to do, which that's not easy to do on this show.
It's really amazing editing. There's so much to praise Amazing Race Canada for, and clearly we've not run out of things, not to get totally fourth wall breaky here, but they are awesome with the casting. They plot a good race, and the editing is so tight and so perfect that you can cram in all sorts of extra stuff that you couldn't cram in to the US version. And, you know, okay, speaking of cramming things in, let's talk about this first task. Let's talk about this parking task, which clearly just a chance to showcase a sponsor, but I thought it was clever. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I was trying to think of what would be the best choice. Like, to me, you know, so that what they had to spell Canada. So you want things that don't have as many curves, I guess, but like maybe you want the D because of the big up and down, but they didn't spend enough time to really make it clear to me. Like, they showed that Corey Nevada picked C, but after that, it was kind of a blur. So I don't know. I wonder if those teams that were a little behind maybe picked the wrong letter.
It didn't seem like it made much of a difference. It looked like the A might have been slightly more difficult, but I think it was kind of 6 of 1, 1/2 a dozen of the other. I think if you're good at parking, you could get you could get your car into that space regardless of what was going on. I got the impression that they did not expect anybody to be bad at this, and yet some teams exceeded expectations.
Well, that's what's so funny about having all these tasks, is you have these teams that seem really bad at this. Like, oh, they're in trouble. And then they're better at the next one, and then they fly past, and then a team's really bad. And then there was so much I didn't track at all. But like, you look at who was bad at that. It was Sam and Paul seemed to be comically bad at the most random things. And then Karen and Bert. But then those teams seemed to be very good later on. Well, some members of the team were very good later on.
50% of the team, yeah, was good later on.
Which we got to save that, because that's great. But that's what I also like about there being so many tasks, is how even the kind of goofy, you know, product placement things didn't seem, you know, teams can recover, because it would seem really dumb if a team got U-turned and eliminated or ended up last because they couldn't use the surround vision technology in their Chevy Equinox.
What a crappy commercial for Chevy that would be if someone just really, really couldn't get it. So I feel like the amazing editors would probably have cut that out if that was the case.
Yeah, or if they crashed. What was, you know, what if they were like,
oh, dear.
They were using it and they got confused and two cars just crashed. That would mean they probably would be where that task would never be shown at all.
That's true. And they'd have to give Chevy all that money back.
Which they don't want to do because Chevy is just getting to advertise like every type of car they've ever created. And this is not the first time. They've done this other seasons. But the benefit to us, like I mentioned earlier, is because Chevy's such a big sponsor, is that they don't take cabs hardly at all. Which can, that's another reason you see like the whole running thing of Andrea and Ebony following Team Giver and that, you know, all these different things that would not happen if they had to not drive.
Yeah, it's true. I think it's kind of a throwback to the early seasons of Amazing Race US that everybody gets to drive themselves. It adds a little element of unpredictability that doesn't rely on blaming random cab drivers out in the world for another team's failure. And I really think all around it makes the show a lot better.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where it's easier in a sense. I know you've got to deal with things like waivers and whatnot with cab drivers, but it seems like not having to make the people drive from a production standpoint, maybe a little easier because, you know, if you're able to, let's just say you just go to a few places, they all get transported there by ferry or train or whatever. It's easier. That's what, another reason that they, by doing this, though, the benefits to the show are so good. I feel like there's that extra care involved in having to put teams in places where they don't, you know, crash or get lost, or they might get lost, but there's still a little more, I think, planning involved with the self-driving, but they really benefit. I think they've only really been one leg where cab drivers played a big role. So
that's great. And if I may, I want to get super nerdy about this car task for a second, because where I thought this was going was a task that we saw in Amazing Race Australia season 2, which is widely regarded by super nerds such as myself to be one of the best seasons of any iteration of the Amazing Race. One of the opening tasks in that season involved a puzzle that people had to do where they had this big pen and there were all these white cars and one black car, and you had to move all of the white cars in order to get the black car out so that you could drive the black car. And it was a dorky sliding puzzle on the level of something that would come free with your computer. But it was huge because it was all of these cars, and it was such an interesting brain power task and also a way to showcase the vehicle. And there's really, I've never seen anything else quite like it. And I thought this is right up Canada's alley. But then it turned out to be this lame, like spelling Canada task. And I was slightly disappointed on that front because I thought we were going to get the car sliding puzzle again. But I'm the only person that was looking out for that. So I think we can forgive them.
I'm intrigued by that. I am so bad. I've tried to do kids slide puzzles like a Mickey Mouse, and I am so bad at it. Like, Dad, finish. And I can't do it. I'm just like, I'm done. So that car thing, that sounds so challenging because it's not like you can get a helicopter and go fly above the cars and figure it out. You've got to figure it out from the ground, obviously. Though I would say this, while not good, was better than the Amazing Race US task, where they basically got in the car, drove the car and hauled a little bit of wood and revealed the clue, which to me, or the one where they just drove over mud, which I guess might have been fun, but lamer. I think this was kind of maybe on par with the mud one, but much better than the drive the car 100 feet and find a clue, which is the worst.
What about the reverse obstacle course one, which I believe was the blind date season?
Yes.
The Bergen and Kurt refusing to drive episode.
That was an okay one. You know, the thing, weird thing about that, it was almost like they drove to this really cheap makeshift like theme park dark ride where they were going backwards through this weird thing. And it seemed really kind of thrown together. But I like that they at least, well, as we saw, that was another case where I don't think they expected any team to struggle and it led to a full meltdown. So you never know. Who knows what could have happened with this?
Yeah, who knows? But anyway, everybody correctly spelled Canada, which, you know, given how well they performed later in the leg, not a total given. And everybody moves on. And then we get to the roadblock, which was basically an excuse to put people's hands all over a horse's butt.
Yeah, at first I thought it was going to be a little more like the riding might be something, but the riding was really a way for everybody to go, yeah, woo, I rode. And most of it, yeah, I did enjoy how the guy who was like guiding them even gave them the extra instructions on they could you either pull the left side or the right side in order to in order to take care of the butt. And, you know, no snarky hashtags, though. Amazing Race Canada, they don't really do hashtags. So I'm kind of glad at that, because usually they're really lame. Like, they might, for that, they'd probably just go hashtag horses or something, you know, which there's so many other options you could use. But I found this to be fun. And again, though, did you notice how some teams still weren't very good at this?
It seemed pretty cut and dried to me, but I guess there are a lot of details involved. And honestly, like, if you're comparing this to the RCMP task from season one, where they had to set up like the whole dorm room in the training academy, this really didn't seem that hard. I guess there's the extra added element of there being a live animal that you could conceivably piss off and end up getting bitten or kicked. But these horses were pretty well behaved. And I guess the whole ride in at the end was probably just so that the association with the Mounties did not begin and end with horse butts.
Yeah, they'd be known as the horses that, you know, you were just waiting to, of course, for some horse to fart or something, or even something worse, which of course happened.
They're horses. It's what they do.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happens. I did enjoy how all the horses, they made a point to show a lot of their names. So that was a big part of it. You know, we got Corey, who's like, you know, that's how William likes it and stuff. So you get, and also I had to mention Ryan, who had, you know, who just was standing at the horse, like he thought it was going to be like a pony, and he was very confused. Ryan had a lot of confusion going on this week, I think, but he just has this quote where he's just like, big horse. That's like all he said and stared there, and I was just like, oh, he's a little confused. But yeah, it wasn't very hard. I mean, we had the little thing with Andrea losing the piece, but that was probably like a minute. So really, this, like you said, was mostly an excuse to show off the Mounties, which is nice, and to show off horses' butts.
That's pretty much all it is. There's a picture of Ryan in the dictionary next to the word gormless.
Yeah, he's something. Though Kenneth apparently is actually the driving force of this team, because he seems to be able to do most things, while Ryan, just a happy dude, I guess. A little confused.
Well, you got to run the race with a partner. They don't let you go on by yourself.
Yeah, that's true. I did also enjoy, too, speaking of just kind of people acting like kids, Adam looked like he had never done anything more fun in his life. Like, he was at Disneyland basically riding that horse. And granted, that is kind of a trend that we're seeing. So I think this was a task the teams really enjoyed. So and that's fun.
Yeah, it was low pressure. The horses weren't, you know, like Peruvian donkeys or anything like that. They were chill horses. It was a good time. And I'm glad that you didn't have anybody like excessively trying the horse's patience either.
Yeah, there was nobody who, like, you know, you get some of those racers. We don't really have any this season, but they just start screaming and crying whenever anything is hard. Like, I can't do this. There was no one like that. So, and that would be the person that might, you know, like, that would freak out about having to get near a horse's butt or something. There have been racers in the past that would do that. So, and that would be the one where the horse would eventually just like kick them or like go in the corner and hide. But these seem to be well-trained horses, and we have a very friendly group of racers, as we usually do on this version of the show.
Dan, where do you come down on animals getting people names?
I'm okay with it. You know, I don't know. It doesn't bother me too much here, because I feel like, you know, these horses are very well trained. They're kind of, you know, part of the group, you know, part of the Mounties. So I think they deserve to have their names. But I don't know if every case. What do you think on this?
Yeah, I think I'm glad that it got to do all people names or no people names. Like, you can call your horses Sparky and Thunder and Cuddles, or you can call your horses, you know, Gus and Duncan and William. You can't have a mixture.
Yeah, I think for these horses, I also, Gus, of course, is a wonderful name for a horse. That, like, there's a Disney movie named Gus about a horse or donkey that kicked field goals, but maybe I'm getting confused. I think it's called Gus. For a second, I thought it was Francis the Talking Mule. I'm getting these things confused. As a kid, I watched a lot of live action Disney movies because the parents thought that was okay to watch, you know, from like the 60s and 70s. And I believe Gus was a horse or a mule. It might have been a horse that played football and kicked field goals. So in that sense, you know, I don't know. These horses might not kick field goals, but they deserve human names, I think. But I think, though, I would have also laughed if they had silly names like Sparky and Thunder. So you just saying that made me laugh. So it would be good.
Yeah, and we'll cut out the long pause where I was coming up with, like, extra horse names. But, Dan, you are correct. The 1976 film Gus. And this is a tangent you and I could go on for days because that was my childhood as well. Was like, oh, we don't really want you watching anything that your peers are watching, but you can watch every live action Disney movie from the 60s and 70s. That's cool.
Yeah, many starring Kurt Russell, for that matter.
It was like Kurt Russell, and it was like the same three children in every movie, too. It was like the boy from Mary Poppins was in like all of those movies.
And Merlin Jones, of course, yes, was in a lot of them. But right now I'm writing a proposal for Rob about our next podcast about Disney movies of the 60s and 70s. And then immediately we will be let go from the group of podcasters.
We'll go. If we don't do a podcast next week, it's because Rob hated this idea so much that we got kicked out of All Things Rob Has a Podcast.
He's like, you spent 3 minutes talking about Gus? That's it.
Like, Rob, you spent 2.5 hours talking about Billy Madison. Come at me, bro.
Okay, well, shall we move on?
Let's move on to the detour.
Yes, the detour. Did you notice the detour did not have your simple names here? There was no throw it or toss it or run it or walk it. You know, those are not real names. But we had Tip, you know, I can't even, I wrote it down. I can't even read it, but it was a long name about tulips.
Tiptoe through the tulips.
Yes. And then Get the Picture, which is a little similar. But Tiptoe Through the Tulips, as you just saw there, not an easy thing to say. So apparently nobody wanted to get the picture, though. What was the deal?
I don't understand this, Dan. Like, there must be something in the description that was a little misleading here, because honestly, I looked at those two tasks and in a vacuum, like just like not based on anything else around it, like how far they were from the tasks or anything else like that. I looked at those two tasks and I thought Get the Picture seemed like the far easier task. So I don't understand why everybody immediately thought to go to tulips. Like, maybe it was just a nice day and they wanted to be outside. I don't even know.
Well, you know what? Get the Picture was one of those that John's description, I went, ooh, that sounds hard. And then you watched it and you went, no, it's one that takes a certain amount of time. I mean, Team Giver completed it very easily. If you're not rushing or going too fast, it would probably take however long it took. The tulips, I bet it took as long to build that thing as it took to do the entire other task. And also, we heard from one of our listeners, Noel Kivimaki, apologize for the pronunciation if that's incorrect. He says teams should have picked Art Bank for detour because it was only 4 kilometers from the stables, where the tulips was an extra 10 kilometers. Now, teams may not have known this, but if they did check, that's another reason they should have gone to it. I just think they might have just picked the one that sounded more fun, maybe. I don't know.
To me, it looked like the difference between the two tasks was the difference between putting together a piece of IKEA furniture and going to the IKEA and finding the furniture.
That's actually a good example, because that did look kind of like an IKEA warehouse. I've spent a lot of time in our IKEA in the past few months, and putting together furniture, not as fun either.
No, it's really not. Give me a list of stuff and make me go find it in the IKEA, and I'll do that all day long. Maybe we just have a weird idea of fun, Dan.
I guess. And it's not like everyone was standing next to each other and they all picked it. Teams independently all seemed to choose. Maybe they just really liked the name Tiptoe Through the Tulips. They had this image of just tiptoeing around or something. But really, they made the wrong decision, where you saw there were some teams like Andrea and Ebony. Granted, they also got lost, but that took a decent amount of time to do the tulips. And it might have changed, notwithstanding the confusion over who should U-turn who, it might have changed how things went.
It very well could have. And honestly, you had a multi-part task that was like, do a thing and then find a bunch of things without being told explicitly where those things are, or go to this task where they're going to tell you where everything is. It seemed like a no-brainer to me. And I think if more people had chosen the Art Bank, we would have had even more mix-ups than we already did.
Yeah. And I guess there was a second part, which was take the picture and put it in the binder. But it's really hard to mess up that. I mean, there's no needle in the haystack part of it, because the flowers are, excuse me, the tulips, which I know are a flower, but I was just trying to be more specific. I don't know why I had to correct myself. I thought it would be more like a bunch of rows, but didn't it seem like some of them, it was like an Easter egg hunt. They were just hidden behind trees and stuff. It was a really weird how things seemed to be packed together, and then there were just random baskets in weird places.
Yeah, it seemed also like a hastily thrown together task, where the art bank, it made a little bit more sense to me. But then again, what do I know? Everybody picks the tulips, and it turns out everybody also gets lost.
Well, except for the super team, the team with the best average placement this race, Sam and Paul, who come out of the horses in last place, yet, at least according to the narrative of the show, asked for directions, took their time, and arrived in first at the tulips, which that flipped everything around. That made a huge difference.
Yeah, I don't know how they did that, but that was pretty amazing. Props to them for that. If only they were as good at multiple choice tests as they were at this. But it was impressive to watch. And I'm telling you, I told you from the beginning, Sam and Paul are the team to watch. Turns out not necessarily just because they're the most boring team. They're actually not that boring.
Yeah, and luckily they had a case where one of them, this was really Sam's episode to shine, was very good at building. Paul looked like me trying to build something there. So poor Paul this week. And Karen and Bert had Bert, who's like the super builder. And it did not surprise me at all that Bert was good at building. He just seemed like that dad, really. And so they come out of it ahead. But yeah, it's interesting to see how even the tulips, which seemed kind of goofy, could lead. Most of the difference in how teams finish had to do with the building, which was odd, not the needle in the haystack. But I'm getting all thrown around here. Teams did get lost. And Corey and Ivana, they just are not good at the driving, I will say. And Andrea and Ebony are right there, too. But I wrote down in my notes at that point, Corey and Ivana are lost again. It seems to happen, but yet they also seem to be able to find their way to skirt through. So I don't know. This is the greatness of the self-driving. If you had tried to track, like on a chart, all the flip arounds of all the different positions, like we talked about earlier, it would be nearly impossible. It was really fun.
The interesting thing that I used to look at when I was doing notes for podcasting, I would look at Reality Fan Forum has a live episode discussion thread where people just type out exactly what happens as it's happening. And for certain seasons of the US version, after every commercial break, they would have a list of like who's in what place and like who dropped a place and who moved up a place. And they don't even bother to do that for Amazing Race Canada. I think it'd be almost impossible.
Yeah. And I'm looking at my notes and I have this like, this team goes out first, then they're fourth, then they're third. I'm like, what? I can't even read this. I'm like, I don't even know what's going on. Like, and it makes a difference. And can we talk about the how let's we should have led with this probably. Amazing Race Canada, Jess, not stupid at how they do the U-turns. Can you believe it?
I can absolutely believe it because Canada is not stupid. I was so happy to see that. Like, this is how you structure a U-turn. You put the U-turn after the detour and before some other task so that a team has potential to come back from it and perhaps maybe not get totally screwed by the U-turn. And you also have to earn your way into the U-turn by completing a task before you have the opportunity to deploy it. So yeah, so US Amazing Race, you are stupid, Canada, not stupid.
I mean, yes, it was perfect. It's like they couldn't. This is like textbook how you do a U-turn. I mean, even if you don't have time for the Amazing Race Canada put two tasks, like a task, then a roadblock, then the U-turn, then another task. Let's say the U.S. wants to be lazy. OK, put one task, at least a roadblock or an extra task, and then put one after. That's fine. Or at minimum, have them do the detour first before they do the U-turn. It's not rocket science. And then another thing they did here is like they used to do in the US version, they don't even put it at the end of the detour. They had to go somewhere else, which, as we saw with Andrea and Ebony, could be a big problem because that's what costs them. If they had not gotten lost, let's say you put that at the end of the detour, Andrea and Ebony don't get U-turned.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And I do appreciate, again, early seasons of Amazing Race US used to do this a lot more often. I appreciate having an additional location, like an additional something to look at. And We got to go back out into real time for a second here, Dan, because this Beaver Tail stand, actually, while this was filming, there was a random photo that CTV tweeted out of the clue box in front of the Beaver Tail place. And it was all over the internet at the time that the race was filming. And I remember this very distinctly because I looked up. I had no idea what this Beaver Tail stand was. I looked it up and I was a little disappointed they didn't actually do a task there, to be honest, because apparently this is like a giant hunk of fried dough that they just slather in like every type of candy topping you can imagine. And I wanted to see someone eat one of these things, and I kind of want one myself.
Yeah, I've heard of Beaver Tails, possibly because I think they used to or currently sell them at the Canada Pavilion at Epcot Center, or of course, that would be why I would know. But yeah, you know, this disappoints me a little bit. And let me tell you why, because my favorite moment that made me laugh out so hard when I watched it was Team Giver randomly stumbling upon Ryan's brother, which I thought was the strangest moment I've ever thought of. Like, I was, it made me laugh so hard. And I was telling my wife about it. She didn't really find it as funny, but I thought it was so funny. And then I read, someone pointed out, well, you know, they did advertise this as something that people knew about. So it might be a little crazy, but it's not totally outlandish. And that made me a little sad, Jess, because I thought it was a total coincidence.
It makes a better story if it was a total coincidence. But yeah, apparently Johnny Mustard was looking at social media exactly the same way all the rest of us were. And he just kind of showed up. He pulled a Baylor and Missy and he just showed up.
Yeah, I mean, it was still, even knowing that, and Muneed Khan was the person on Twitter who informed me of this because I didn't remember from before. But I was on Facebook, excuse me, in the patron group. Don't want to incorrectly mention that. But basically, I still like that moment because their reactions, because they didn't know, Team Giver, at least from what I can understand, that that had been tweeted out or put out. So their reaction was like they had just won $1 million. It was pretty cool.
It's pretty great. And I think it's one of those things you can probably only successfully do that once. But I would love it if teams randomly ran across loved ones if they go through their own town. I think that's such a fun moment. And as long as they're not going to do anything, like, I think you have to kind of assume they're not going to be helping them out or anything. But I always wondered what would happen if you did run into someone you knew, and would they be allowed to have a conversation with you? And I guess we have our answer now.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting because, yeah, you can't really think of it in terms of the like worldwide Amazing Race, but when you're doing Canada and you assume you're going to go to a few big cities, would there be any way you could possibly come up with some really complicated thing? Or could you just like drive to your friend's apartment? I assume that's not allowed. This is not hunted, you know, but, you know, they couldn't just go hang out for a while, but it is an interesting idea. There have to, I'm sure, be specific rules that, because teams, especially, you know, when you're talking about when you have celebrities and stuff, like, mm-hmm. I mean, Robin Amber found every little way in the US version to get help. So there's still, you can have teams can help you, but there's probably something about family members, or if teams were pulling some shenanigans with friends, they probably would shut it down.
Yeah, because I do know that you are allowed, if you run across the Amazing Race filming, and I don't advocate that you guys seek them out, because we want to make sure this happens organically, and you don't want to wind up being the person that helped the team that ends up being the team everybody hates. But if you do run into the Amazing Race filming out in the wild, you would be totally allowed to go up to a team and help them out, like give them a guidebook or slip them $20. You're totally allowed to do that. And in fact, some of the fans out there on Reality Fan Forum, I know, the ones that follow the race as it's filming in real time, if they're in the city where the show happens to be filming, they'll go down there. And there's one guy, I think, has personally helped a team in like 8 different seasons just by going to LAX and like catching up with teams as they're on their way to the airport. So, you know, it's a thing you're allowed to do. And there are some really great stories of people running into racers. And I think it does get a little bit gray area-y if it's somebody that you know personally that you have a relationship with. So I think Johnny Mustard played that correctly.
Yeah, I was like, hey, that was about it. That was as far as it went.
That's about all you're going to do to Giver.
Yeah, but I don't know. I found that pretty endearing because Givers, I thought coming in, I knew they were going to say Giver a lot, but I thought they'd be a little better at the race. So I was kind of prepared to look at them almost in terms of skills, not in terms of approach like a Gino or Jesse, but they're not particularly good at the race. They're not bad. They're fine. But that actually is more endearing to me because they kind of just bumble their way around more than I expected. And they can do good when they focus, like we saw this week. But things like that, it makes it easier to like, especially they're on my team. So I can root for them better because they're not just running around yelling giver every 2 seconds.
Well, they kind of did this episode. I mean, I guess we need to kind of decide if we're counting other people saying giver, because lots of people said giver this episode, including Team Giver.
I guess we said we were counting John. So yeah. I assume we are counting other teams. So, because there was even the we're going to U-turn Team Giver or Team Giver got U-turned and or, you know, all that. So I think that all counts. I say this knowing that I'm pretty safe in my estimate. So I feel like we can count them.
Yeah. I counted 9 givers this episode, all told.
So what is our total now? I don't remember. We were in the 20s last week. I'm trying to remember the exact number.
I think we were 27 last week. Somebody needs to go back and tell us where we're at with the giver count. But if we were at 27 last week, we're at 36 this week.
All right. I'm feeling good. We're about halfway through the show. I'm right at halfway with what I guessed almost. So doing well now. Come on, Team Giver. Don't do anything weird now. Don't do anything crazy. So should we talk about the U-turn? Because I know there were some interesting decisions, including Karen and Bert, who gave their reasoning for not doing the U-turn was what I'm sure is your favorite reasons for why we shouldn't U-turn someone.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. I kind of hated the sanctimony of it all, but honestly, yeah, they're out in front. They don't need to create enemies. You know, why bother?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I wasn't bothered by the decision, and they don't have any real one. They're not part of that alliance that came together. It was more just after when like she's like, we're going to run a race. That's cool. That's fine. But then it's like, we don't want to race that way. It's like, oh, don't. Yeah. Which, again, not on the level of some teams we've seen in the past. I don't see them turning around next week and just like talking down to everyone. There's going to be no like weirdness like we've seen in some seasons of the U.S. version, especially. But there may be weirdness for another reason. But I assume we can get to that. Sam and Paul, though. Most exciting celebration I think I've seen in a while of not being U-turned, and then decide I like this approach, though. They're like, we came to play. They were excited. Part of it was about the alliance. I also think from what we saw a few weeks ago, they kind of really wanted to U-turn Team Giver. So it was pretty convenient that they were not part of their alliance, and more power to them. They did it.
I'm liking Sam and Paul more and more all the time. Like, they have very distinct personalities. They're two very different guys. They really seem to love each other. And you gotta love a team that gets this excited about something. Like, enthusiasm counts for a lot.
Yeah, they just seem to enjoy playing the game. And it's not like I'm just using them as a counterpoint, because Karen and Bird have enjoyed being on this show too. But it was just fun to see them, like, you know, they're making an alliance there, which usually is never a good idea, but they're trying to do things. They seem to be enjoying it. Sam seems to especially be enjoying it, and as we'll see when we get to the test. But interesting. So then next step, Adam and Andreas show up and we have the big decision. How crazy was their choice? Was it? I mean, I could see why they did it, but could it hurt them down the road?
Well, they were working with the information they had. And I think we're going to get to this in a second, because I thought it was interesting. Like, they just assumed, like, we don't know if this team is behind us. We don't necessarily want to waste it, and we don't necessarily need to either. But I think it was interesting. It was very strange, like, to watch them working with information that we knew was not correct, but they had no way of knowing that.
Yeah. And also the fact that their assumption was, oh, well, I guess Andrea and Ebony decided they're not part of the alliance. Since they didn't do it, we're not going to do it either, which I understand the logic there. It's not they're basically, because when you just formed an alliance, apparently that episode, your thought might be, well, why are the other people going to do it? They're going to make us look like the villains. So they figure, you know, why bother? We're ahead. We'll do fine. And they did do fine. It looks like next week. I mean, who knows if that's as big as it was. It might be a 30-second moment next week. But that it could come back to haunt them. Probably not with their placement in the race, just with their relationships.
Yeah, that seems about right. That alliance isn't going to last forever. I think Adam and Andrea's philosophy was someone already has gotten U-turned. Team Giver, you think about this in terms of like Team Giver's been U-turned. Team Giver would probably U-turn someone themselves if they themselves had gotten to the board. And since they weren't there yet, they hadn't even discovered they'd been U-turned. That's how much of a lead that Adam and Andrea had. So they're not U-turning for survival. They believe that Andrea and Ebony have already been there and didn't U-turn, so they don't have to necessarily honor this new alliance they just made. There's not really a compelling reason to U-turn if you have all of that information in front of you, and if you look at what they had to work with. So it's not crazy, but I will be interested to see if this is more than like a passing mention at the beginning of the next leg where they're all sitting around in the airport. They're like, hey, I thought we were in alliance. Well, we're not in an alliance. And knowing historically how Amazing Race Canada is, I'm going to guess there's not going to be any huge rivalry or any kind of like personal enmity about this.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't seem likely. And really, the worst thing that could happen is they get U-turned. Which we're not seeing a U-turn next week. The most likely scenario is we probably won't see we'll see one more either at the final five, you know, after and maybe another elimination or even maybe at the final four, which I don't particularly like. But the most we'll see is one more U-turn. And when you have an alliance of three, when there's only six teams left, it seems like the odds of that lasting very long anyway are really low. So I think it wasn't a big mistake. You know, like you said, they didn't know and it wasn't. They're about their survival. I mean, heck, they finished first. So it was because they're very good test takers, surprisingly for them. But it wasn't a big deal for me. It was interesting then that you have Ray and Ivana come up and they basically were like, yeah, we're going to U-turn somebody. So they U-turn Andrea and Ebony, which I thought was an interesting move, too.
Yeah, that was weird to me because Andrea and Ebony had left that task well before Corey and Ivana did. So what are they assuming? Is this just... We got a question about this, too. And thank you, question asker, for pointing this out. But what was that all about? Like, did they just assume that Andrea and Ebony were going to be really bad at directions?
I wonder if they met up with them at some point when both teams were lost. Because if not, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Because when you see that, I mean, unless they saw other teams, there's something else they knew that we didn't know as an audience. Because it doesn't, what they did, that doesn't seem like the most likely scenario. So it's hard to say without knowing much, but knowing how they also tend to get lost a lot, you would think the show would show that, but they might not have had coverage or time. But on the surface, it seemed very strange that they would pick them. Now, granted, it was the total right choice because it gave them extra time, but it didn't make a lot of sense at all.
Yeah, it was, I guess it was kind of a casualty of the really tight editing. Editing, not perfect. Sorry. Maybe I was a little too high on the editing earlier.
Yeah. Corey and Ivana showed up at about the same time as Team Giver did, like right after. Our Team Giver showed up right after Corey and Ivana. So Team Giver, what's interesting is, let's say Team Giver shows up a minute or two after that, doesn't see Corey and Ivana. They may not have even U-turned Andrea and Ebony either. They might have U-turned Corey and Ivana. So it's like there's so many different ways this could have gone, partially because everything was spread out. It was in a separate location and they were all driving. It's kind of amazing that it actually went the way it did and there wasn't some random team eliminated or U-turned incorrectly like who was ahead.
Yeah, it really did all fall into place. It was very elegant in its way.
An elegant U-turn that led to no eliminations.
So I guess now we got to talk about the task that I think was really the star in the firmament of this episode. The Canadian citizenship test, because we're in the nation's capital and we're going to see how much they know about this country that they love, that this show is a whole love letter to. And it does not go well for some of the teams.
This was so fun. I talked about this with the math task earlier this season. I found this very entertaining, which is weird because they were just holding papers and writing. But all the repeated, Paul, you have failed. Bert, you have failed, was really fun. And it was also, I don't know, it was just a neat idea for a task that was much harder than I would have even guessed for people from Canada.
Yeah, and we didn't even have a pencils down guy. We could have used a pencils down guy. But this guy was like, with his deadpan announcements of everybody's performance, he was all right, but he could have been a little meaner.
Yeah, he wasn't like the guy we had earlier this season with the metalsmithing who seemed so disappointed about how bad they were. He could have been like, you are not a good Canadian citizen, or you have not made Canada proud. I think that would have been the choice, but It was, I think he did get some glee out of repeatedly telling the same people over and over that they had failed. Because some of them, judging by how many times they failed, I have to wonder how bad their first few. I mean, they didn't do the same. I don't think they did the same questions every time. Maybe they did. I doubt it. But if they did, even some of those guys might have been like, were we talking 30%, 40% the first few times? Because you would have figured after a while, just by the odds, they would eventually hit on one that would win.
So what was the pass rate? Did they ever say?
It was 75% is what they had to get. So it was 20 questions. They could miss five. So it was, you know, it wasn't super easy. It wasn't 60, but it also wasn't like they had to get 90%.
Yeah, that does seem a little bit off. And I did enjoy John kind of trolling a couple of people. Like, I enjoyed him telling Paul that if he'd failed one more time, they were going to revoke his citizenship.
With the judge standing there, too.
The judge is like, yeah, that seems legit.
Yeah, there was no laughing from the judge. The judge was like, yeah. Which, of course, Paul did not do nearly as bad as the super champ of failing, Mr. Burt, who did average in school, I've been told.
Apparently, although Karen can't vouch for that. I think that was my favorite moment of the whole episode, was just Karen deadpanning. I didn't know him in school.
Like, basically, if I had known him in school, things might have been different. I love the shot where those two guys, Paul and Bert, are taking the test, and Karen and Sam are sitting behind them with these grins on their faces, looking one sense kind of disappointed, but also loving how well they did compared to their partners, which I found very entertaining. As somebody personally who, when I went back to grad school, I was a little obsessive over doing really well in the test. As like a 35-year-old, more than as a student in college, I find this very enjoyable.
Yeah, I love, it's almost like the roadblock where the non-roadblocking team member gets to stand there in the peanut gallery. But this was even better because it was like everybody had to do the roadblock and some people pass it and then get to sit there smug. And yeah, I appreciated all of this task. And now I guess we have to reveal, Dan, that we found a simulator online of the Canadian citizenship test. And I think we need to reiterate, neither Dan nor I am Canadian. You know, we're from Canada's pants down here in the U.S. And we took the test just for funsies to see how we would do. And we're going to reveal now what our totals were. Dan, how did you do?
Well, let me say first, the test required you to choose a province, and I'm not an expert. So I chose British Columbia because I've been to Vancouver, and there were two questions specific to that province that I missed both of those. And I'm very sad to admit that I even missed the capital of British Columbia, where I guess Vancouver. So I will let you say it, Jess, but you can say the phrase on the negative side from the test taker.
All right, Dan. I am sorry to tell you that you have failed the test.
I will say this, though. I got 65%. Now, and there were a couple that I almost, like the House of Commons question where I put the Senate, which was stupid, or even Victoria being the capital. I feel like if I had taken this something similar a couple more times, I would have passed. I would not have been there 14 times. But I will say I do not know who the governor general is, which I had. I do not know the name of the opposition party, apparently. I did not know the Métis or Métis, what exactly that was. But I was pretty proud of myself overall, because there were a few that I wasn't sure about that I kind of logically thought through. So that was mine. I feel like I did not pass, but as a non-Canadian, if I had scored like a 20%, I'd be hiding under the table. I'm feeling okay here. I was a couple like where I had two choices and picked the wrong one away from getting it. So, Jess, how did you do?
Well, Dan, I am not going to get to join Canada either on the strength of this test. I only scored a 70%. I missed six questions and were only allowed to miss five. When it asked me to choose a province, I said that I was from Alberta because I practically was. I grew up very close to the border, just on the wrong side of it, obviously. And I must admit that many of the things I knew that were on this test, I only know because I watched The Amazing Race Canada.
Yeah, that was true for me, too.
Yeah. So I mean, who says television is not educational, right? But yeah, there were a lot of really random questions I was not going to get, like which province is the main producer of pulp and paper and hydroelectricity? Yeah, sorry, don't know. And I'm sure I got some of these correct by blind guessing. I'm still like, I'm pretty okay with 70%, considering I'm not from Canada, but we both would have had to take that test a couple of times, so we're not throwing shade on anybody that did.
Yeah, and did you get asked who the lieutenant governor of your province was?
I did not, but I don't even know who the lieutenant governor of my state is right now.
Yeah, I don't either, because the one I knew lost in the last election in the red state sweep. So I don't want to think about that too much. But yes, I did not get the pulp question, but that would have also been hard. So yeah, it was difficult, but I'd be curious to try it. Not for this show, but to try it a few more times and really see if I could do better, or if the questions, maybe I was lucky with the questions I had. But regardless, it was fun to do, but I think I would have gotten finished before Bert and Paul, yeah, possibly. And Ivana, who was, she ended up doing it like four or five times. Corey and Ivana were kind of in that zone. But I am impressed, though, especially unless they were just being humble. Adam and Andrea both finishing on the first try, and neither one seeming particularly knowledgeable or excited about it. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, good for them. And again, maybe they just got the right questions. I don't know, but I was impressed by it. I don't know how well I would do if in a similar situation, if we all had to take the U.S. citizenship test. Anyway, good for Adam and Andrea. That was impressive. And they earned that first place finish.
Yeah, and Kenneth also did it on the first try, I believe.
Ryan probably tried to eat the first test.
But I forget how many tries he did exactly. I don't think it was as many as Bert, but it did give time. And this is another thing about the leg design. Andrea and Ebony, who showed up at the second detour they went to at the same time Team Giver left, actually got there before Ryan had finished, where they didn't end up making it. But it was interesting to see that at least the show, again, that extra task made a difference.
I was pretty impressed by this. This is a really well-designed leg. All of it was great. I did think it was a little hokey at the end, and this is just because I feel like as an American, I'm put off by overblown displays of patriotism, whereas I think you can get away with it in other countries a little bit more easily. But I was a little bit put off by the hokiness of having to reaffirm your Canadian citizenship on the mat to the game show.
Yeah, I admit that I got a little goosebumps the first time they did it, with because Adam and Andrea were just so excited. But yeah, it's again, it coming from here where patriotism is used for not great things, it's hard to look at it the same way. But seeing teams talk about, like Sam and Paul talk about their relationship and how excited they were to be in Canada, some of those things did, I felt like, were cool. But yes, the citizenship may have been a little too much. But I'm sure for the people there, after doing that leg in the test, it probably meant a lot for them.
I enjoyed Ivana pointing out that her parents had to take that same test. I thought that was really powerful. But yeah, I think toward the end, I was a little bit over it.
Did you enjoy, though, speaking of things on the other end of the spectrum from Ivana's, Ryan asking if Celine Dion sang did the national anthem?
I did enjoy that. And that seemed about par for the course. And Ryan.
I said it's kind of endearing. But yes, yeah, so yeah, we looked at it. Sam and Paul got second. Corey and Ivana moving up into third with Karen and Bert. Karen and Bert, I was looking at placements of teams that somehow often are in first place, seem to finish fourth or fifth basically every week. Is interesting because they always seem to end up in the same spot no matter what happens.
Yeah, they're very consistent in their mediocrity.
Yeah, and I did. I'm not going to go through it as dorky as I did a few weeks ago, but I did figure out the placement averages again for everyone. And it's kind of what you expect. Andrea and Ebony are at the bottom. Sam and Paul are at the top. Adam and Andrea are very close. But it's still, looking at this,
yeah, I think it's still almost anyone's game, with an asterisk. But anyway, Dan, do you want to get into some of the questions? Because it looked like we had a lot of questions this week. So thank you, everybody, for sending all your questions in.
Yeah, we did a lot from Twitter and from the Robins the Podcast patron group. And we've covered a few of them. Like we had a few people asking, Gregory McBean and Lindsay Wilson on Facebook both asked about the test and how many attempts we think we had and all of that. So we've covered a lot of it. So let me look through here and see what we haven't really talked about. Here's the big question we got asked. So I will use the example of Kari on Twitter, who said, is it typical to have a non-elimination leg when there's a double U-turn, or a shizzle said an episode of Non-Elimination. I really dislike it. Jess, I've done some research on this. Would you like me to go into it about the times in the past, all the seasons of the Amazing Race Canada and the recent U.S. when this has happened?
Yes, please.
Okay, so it's not that common. I actually had it in my head that this was more common. I was ready to tell people, actually, the U-turn and Non-Elimination happens all the time. But it's actually fairly rare. But so in Canada, we've had two U-turns every season. I won't go through all of them because that's just not that exciting. So you've had, now we've had nine U-turns. This was the third time it's been a non-elimination. The first was in season one at the final four with Vanessa and Selena. So final four, you understand a little more. I think the best comparison to this was in season three. This was the other kitchen sink leg I could think of, where Simi and Ope could not do the water hockey polo. And then there was a face-off and a U-turn. And it was one of those legs that had so much happening. And then Simi and Ope were last, but were not eliminated. This was leg five. So while this wasn't like that, that to me is the best example, and this being leg six, of a leg with so much stuff where the show decided, we're going to put in a U-turn and still have a non-elimination. And the U.S. version, I did not go through the entire U.S. because that's crazy. But I looked at the last five seasons where there have been 11 U-turns, and there's only been one non-elimination, which I thought there was more. In season 27, leg four, there was a U-turn with the non-elimination, where I thought it might have been more. So to answer generally, it does happen. It's not that common. More common on Canada recently, but the bigger question, I guess, is, Jess, what do you think about them doing this?
I think it's okay. I don't love it, but I think in a leg where a lot of exciting stuff happened and they packed a lot of action into it, I think it's okay to do that. And I think the impact of the eventual outcome was not lessened by the fact that it was a non-elimination leg. And I think Andrea and Ebony are still going to have to cover a lot of ground to make up for their performance this leg and for getting U-turned. And, you know, it's not ideal, but I can live with it.
Yeah, me too, I think. I feel like I would not want to see this happen every time. But sometimes when they do a U-turn and they kick out a really good team, or like a team like we barely know, like Seth and Olive went out last season of the U.S. version, I kind of feel gypped. Like maybe that's just they do the U-turn too early in the show. Like this is like six. But when they do a U-turn like three or like four, and some team that you think had a lot of promise gets eliminated, I don't really like it. So to me, Andrea and Ebony now have been saved twice, but I don't feel like they're going to be in the finals. I think there's several weaknesses they have. They may survive next week, but I think it's most likely they're going to get eliminated next week or soon. So Diane Lum said, ask if they rigged, says, feels like they want to rig it so the girls stay in the game. This comes up pretty much every time there's a non-elimination, a team gets saved more than once, which has happened for teams that have won, for teams that have not won. It's weird luck that it happens so often. But Jess, what do you think? Is the show rigged?
The show is not rigged. The show, why this team? Like, why is the show that invested? I don't see it. Andrea and Ebony are not the most dynamic, exciting team that everyone's going to love. Like, they're presence or absence from the race, like they seem like perfectly nice people. Their presence or absence from the race is not going to make or break the show. There's no reason to keep them in. The motive's not there, and it would take a lot of machinations for that to happen. So yeah, no.
Yeah, I have to agree there. I mean, we've seen it before. I think the Beekmans had this happen. BJ and Tyler from season 9 had it, and that was the one actually that got the most claims because of they thought the show wanted them. But really, they're a game show. It's similar to like Jeopardy or The Price is Right, or, you know, there was game show scandals. They can, you know, do things to adjust, like Survivor has this where it's even shadier sometimes. But if they found out they were doing this to help a team, they would be in trouble. It's nothing that they would not risk it just to save a team, even a team that people loved. And Andrea and Ebony, a lot of people like, but there are a lot of people like most of these teams. So I don't think it would happen in any scenario.
Definitely not. I think the one time I remember people saying that it was totally hinky was Mark and Bopper getting saved by the non-elimination leg in India. That seemed to some people like it might have been a rigging, but considering they went out the very next episode, I would have to say that was definitely not. And if that wasn't, then this definitely wasn't.
Yeah, I agree. So what other questions should we talk about here?
We had several people pointing out that the pit stop was crossing provincial borders and ended up being in whole Quebec. So that's kind of a cool little bit of trivia. It's not really much of a question. I like this question from Derek, who asks, which team from this season has all-star potential so far?
It's a tricky question because you look on the surface of the, I mean, because they've never had an all-star season, so I can't even say for sure what they're looking for. Oh, this is tricky. I don't think Karen and Bird. I don't think Andrea and Ebony. So I'm kind of limiting the ones that I don't think they would pick. And originally I would have said no to Sam and Paul, but I actually think they're kind of likable in a way that they might be picking. But I think right now there's no team that's the one team, but I would say that probably Team Giver, because they're kind of crazy. Corey and Ivana, because they have a good story and they're fun. And I also think Adam and Andrea, because, you know, there's a guy and a girl. They are brother sister, which they may want to have a team like that. And they have a good relationship. So those three, I think, are most likely for each their own reasons.
Yeah, but I think you're right that none of them are on like the top tier list. Honestly, I can see any of these teams showing up on an all-star season if other teams say no. I think Team Giver gets asked if Mickey and Pete say no, but Team Giver is really just like Mickey and Pete turned up to 11. And I think Adam and Andrea are a likely pick if like some of the other mixed gender teams get asked and are in turn it down or aren't available for whatever reason. But yeah, nobody this season is jumping out to me as someone like we have to see this person again. Not the way that we've had several other teams kind of do that.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. I think the main reason they might have a team from the season, let's say they did an all-star season in season 6, they would want to have teams from the most recent season. So you might get two or three from this season just because it's most recent. But you're probably not going to have Adam and Andrea if you have Suki and Jinder, because that's another brother sister team that people liked and that were big character. Or Jet and Dave and Mickey and Pete, you're not going to have those two and Team Giver probably, because you're probably going to want to bring in a few winners. Well, if you do bring in winners, I might not recommend it. You might want to put in Gino and Jesse or Mickey and Pete. You know, there's other options they could do.
Favorite Gino and Jesse.
Yeah, you're not going to see the Tims again probably. But so much depends, like you said, on who they pick. But I think we will see a few from this season. It's just at this point, I feel like there are none. There are three that if they came, I wouldn't say that's stupid. Why would they do that? But there's no one that I say is a lock. There's no, you know, Megan and Natalie. there's not even a Brennan Sean who I feel like will be on the All-Star season if they wanted to do it just for the puking. So there's a lot of good options here that
we have both Megan and Natalie and Brent and Sean. It's just like all-star puke season.
Pretty much. It's just, you know, that's going to happen. But it's a fun discussion. If the show's ratings are still good, but they're not as they've gone down a little bit each season. So we may see an all-star season. I don't know if it's next, but assuming it gets renewed, we might see one fairly soon.
I would say the next 2 years. Maybe not next season. They might be jumping the gun on that. But season after that, I think season 7 looks like a good bet.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Plus, they only have one season a year. So I feel like some of the season 1 and season 2 teams, it won't feel like we just saw them. Like if it was just like 2 seasons a year, if they did that, I'd feel like, oh, like it even feels like a long time ago that we had season 3. So it wouldn't be that big a deal if it was season 7 if we saw some of those teams again.
What do you think the odds are that they'll get Body Break to come back?
I don't know. I mean,
they seemed bitter.
Well, yeah. I mean, they thought they were going to win. I mean, they're one of those teams coming in like everything is that way. And especially to get outlasted by some of the teams they got out, like, you know, Vanessa and Selena and Brett and Holly. And they probably did not expect that.
But I feel like maybe they don't do it until they get Body Break to come back.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful. I'm sure whatever they do, there's going to be a few head scratching teams. Teams, some most will, like Steph and Kristen would come back in a heartbeat, but I don't know it's so recent where they want to do that again.
I think we're probably jumping the gun by about a year when it comes to casting an all-star season, but I think this is a good cast. We have people that I really like from it, but I do see a lot of these teams as being sort of like the people that will come back for an all-star season if the people they really want say no.
Yeah, and it's in a weird way, the even playing field in terms of interest and skills makes it harder to pick all-stars because there's no duds, total duds right now that we have left. Like sometimes you'll have a team that gets to the finals where I wouldn't say dud, that's a little mean, but that they're nice and forgettable. We've got six teams. They're all pretty interesting in some way. There's just not two standouts and four other ones.
Yeah, which makes it a fun ride. And any of these teams in the finals, I'm going to be totally okay with.
Yes, even Team Giver?
Even Team Giver. You know, I have to give them credit. They've said Giver approximately 90 fewer times than I thought they would by this point. So kudos again to the editors for that, because I'm pretty sure that's not on Team Giver.
Yeah. Well, no, I think we've covered all the questions, especially because, you know, this has been a pretty long podcast, a lot to cover this week.
Indeed. So, yeah, thanks to everybody for participating in all of the ways that you participated. And if you want to leave us feedback, we always love hearing from you. The easiest way to do it is just to tweet at us. You can tweet at me at Haymaker Hattie.
And I am at the Dan Heaton.
That's a great way to get in touch. You could also go on robhaswebsite.com and leave a comment on the page for this episode. That's a great way to do it. And you can also leave us feedback in the Rob Has a Podcast patron group, which is open to people that support Rob Has a Podcast on Patreon, which we highly recommend doing for a variety of reasons, not least of which is that we share all of the ways that fans have found to watch Amazing Race Canada when they themselves are not in Canada. That's what we recommend whenever somebody asks us. So those are my answers to anybody asking me, how are you watching the show? I am following instructions given to me by fellow patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. So with all of that, stay tuned, everybody, for what is sure to be our upcoming movie cast on That Darn Cat. And apart from all that, we hope you have a great week, and we'll see you next week.